This is Mike Johnson with the download edition of World Business Report for Wednesday, the 9th of April. Bailed out Greece bounces back into the bond markets. Athens is poised to borrow once more from international investors. But as a general strike over austerity causes new disruption, is Greece really fixed?
I consider it to be an abomination. I think this is a very sad day for Greece and it is a sad day for Europe.
Also in this edition, wiping out your dandruff, not the rainforests. The world's biggest consumer products business, Procter & Gamble, promises to be more green, but is it enough?
It's not the big victory, it's the small step to the long way to stop deforestation globally.
A new bug infects software supposed to make the world's websites secure. Plus, not just for pandas, how the historic bamboo industry of Taiwan is making a comeback.
In this room, everything is made of bamboo. The floors, the tables, the bed, and even the mattress is made from bamboo charcoal.
That's all coming up over the next half an hour. Well, not that long ago, Greece was heading for bankruptcy and a very messy exit from the euro. Now, Athens is poised to end its four-year exile from the bond markets. Tomorrow, Greece is expected to tap those markets for loans worth around $3.5 billion. More on that shortly. First, though, many ordinary Greeks would disagree their country is returning to normal. A general strike in protest at the impact of austerity today saw thousands of protesters march through central Athens to vent their anger.
We are here because of the new law that passed last week that completely obliterates work rights, rights for large social groups in Greece. We are here because things need to change in Greece. We're here because there's no other way but to get on the roads, demonstrate, say that this situation cannot continue.
We strike because our country is not free. We have the problem with the European and American policy. We have no real democracy. We have only poverty. We are a rich country. Which cannot give a survival to population. The foreigners are taking all the Greek goods.
Well, Greece has suffered six straight years of recession. Unemployment is 28%. And yet, the government is confident global investors will now believe the country's on the right track and once again be tempted to buy its bonds. Hugo Dixon is editor-at-large of Reuters News.
It's basically experiencing a financial recovery, an astonishing turnaround in its position, as you say, on the bond market. I mean, the yield on the 10-year bond, for example, was 30% just about 2 years ago, and it's now down to just over 6%. So that's an extraordinary recovery.
That reflects how risky investors think a bet on Greece is, in simple terms.
Yeah, so 6% means it isn't considered to be so risky anymore. This is not just because of Greece, mind you. Greece has done quite a few things to get its economy back in order. It's liberalised its labour market and that's restored its competitiveness, which means it now is almost balanced in its trade and current account. It's also reined in its public expenditure. And so it's nearly back to balance on its budget. I mean, when you look before interest payments, it's actually got a surplus. So these are the things that Greece has done.
There are still huge problems, though, aren't there? If you look at the shopping list of things that was wrong with the Greek economy in the run-up to the crisis, things like tax evasion, corruption, nobody trusting the statistics that the Greek government came out with about economic growth, not enough economic growth. I mean, there are still some real problems, aren't there?
A lot of that stuff has been cleared up, though. I'm not saying it's all been cleared up. I mean, tax evasion is still a problem, but they are cracking down on it. I'm not trying to pretend that everything is good. I mean, there are lots and lots of things, for example, restrictive practices. There are monopolies and cartels or just lots of barriers to entry in various industries. And that means that everything from the price of petrol to the price of milk is higher than it should be because there's not enough competition. And of course, unemployment. Unemployment is more than a quarter of the workforce is unemployed. And you can't say anything is good if that's the case. This is why I said that the real recovery at the moment has been in the financial side rather than in the real economy. That said, when you look at the real economy, I think the best summary is that it's stopped falling.
And do you think Greece's future in the euro is now secure. It was only a couple of years ago that we were talking about its exit from the euro being kicked out or withdrawing. Will it stay now?
I think it's very likely. The real weakness in the Greek recovery story, I think, is political and political risk. We have a government led by Antonis Samaras, who's a centre-right politician. It's in coalition with the centre-left, the former governing party, which basically shrunk to a tiny, tiny extent of what it used to be. Then you've got the radical left, Syriza opposition party, and they're less extreme than they seemed 2 years ago, but they are probably either neck and neck or ahead in the opinion polls. And if there's an election and they came in, it's not certain that... I think they probably still would stay in the euro, but it's not certain. There are some of their members who actually want to pull out of the euro, and they want to pursue economic policies that wouldn't be consistent with membership of the euro. So there would have to be a further moderation in what they want to do if they actually wanted to stay the course. I think the people want to stay in the euro, so I think ultimately, even if there was a change of government, that Greece would stay in the euro, but it's not 100% certain.
Hugo Dixon of Reuters News. Not everyone, though, is as convinced by the return of Greece to the financial markets. Yanis Varoufakis is an economics professor at Athens University.
I consider it to be an abomination. I think this is a very sad day for Greece, and it is a sad day for Europe.
Why? If Greece can raise billions more of let's face it, much-needed new money, what's wrong with that?
Well, the fact of the matter remains that the Greek state and the Greek banks are deeply insolvent. So their return to the money market brings back memories of subprime markets, where you will recall that prior to 2008, a voracious appetite for yield led to a great wall of money being sort of driven towards insolvent or potentially insolvent borrowers.
There are those who say, though, that in a way Greece has experienced a remarkable financial recovery. It was only a couple of years ago when it was about to quit the euro, possibly setting off an unravelling of the entire single currency block. Now factories are beginning to produce again. The country is being courted in financial markets. The world is ready to lend to Greece again.
There has been a remarkable turnaround in international confidence in Greece for one very simple, non-economic reason. Mrs. Merkel took off the table Grexit, the idea of pushing Greece out of the eurozone. It's quite natural that when Germany makes this decision, the abysmal asset prices, you know, share prices and bond prices that were reached when everybody almost took it for granted that Greece was on its way out of the eurozone, they would rebound. But in order to be talking about a genuine rebirth and revivification of the economy, you need to have investment and you need to have credit. And we have neither of those two in Greece.
But how much progress do you think has been made in fixing the government, the state, and fixing the banks?
Well, on both fronts, the reality remains very bleak. When it comes to the banks, it was the International Monetary Fund very, very recently, a couple of months ago, that ascertained that there are very big black holes in the asset books of the Greek banks. Don't forget that the Greek banks have to labor under the weight of 40% non-performing loans. And this is not a problem that's going away. It's a problem that's getting worse. Simultaneously, the Greek state is deeply bankrupt. There is absolutely no way that the Greek government will find the money which is necessary in order to meet its obligations to the IMF, to the ECB, and to the European Union over the next few years. And yet, we have this grand paradox, that great incongruity. The markets are quite keen to lend to the Greek banks and to the Greek state. And the reason for that...
Yes, I was going to ask you, why, therefore, would anybody do that?
There is an extraordinary demand for subprime assets internationally. But it's very clear that Berlin have an ironclad determination to declare victory on the front of the Greek crisis before the European elections in May. So they are signalling to markets that the official sector will stand behind the fresh Greek bonds and that the European Central Bank is going to have to turn a blind eye to the black holes in the center of the Greek banks. But none of this is going to end well.
That was the economist Yanis Varoufakis at Athens University. Well, joining me live now to discuss the latest from the financial markets is Kathleen Brooks, Research Director at Forex.com. Kathleen, let's start by looking at that Greek return to the bond markets. What kind of investor do you think would back the Greek government now?
I think you've got quite a lot, actually. I think there'll be investors from China and parts of the East and maybe the Middle East. There'll also be big hedge funds who are looking for yield, because that's the big problem. Interest rates are so low everywhere that Greek yield, even with the problems that they still have, even with their very low sovereign credit ratings, is actually attractive in this environment because we've earned nothing on our money for so long.
Right, so that's the return you get on your investment.
Exactly.
And Yanis Varoufakis used that term subprime assets there. That's quite an emotional term, isn't it, over the last 5 years? Is that how you would consider Greek debt?
I think yes, definitely, especially relative to its sovereign rating. But the very big difference is that subprime, I think, has become actually almost nicer for investors because, yes, there's been a lot of subprime over the last 5 years. But what we have seen is central banks, big governments come in and rescue either banks or countries if there's a problem with subprime. So it's not nearly as scary as it was.
So they'd be assuming that the same thing would happen again.
Exactly.
All right. Elsewhere, I think there was a bit of a bounce back for shares in London today. What's going on?
Yeah, they're following on very much from the US. So earlier this week, a big sell-off, mostly led by the tech sector, which is a bit worrying because that tends to be a big leading indicator for market sentiment. But today, we've actually seen things like Facebook, Twitter, Google actually come back a little bit. And that's on the back of Q1 earnings season. It actually got off to a very good start when it started yesterday. It doesn't mean it will stay that way. Things are still nervous, but investors, just that the froth has come off just a little bit.
So that's presumably confidence that some of these companies can make serious money, can make serious profits, which has always been a question mark over the likes of Twitter.
Well, interestingly enough, they're actually bouncing on other people's earnings, not their own. We still have to wait for that. But yes, I think just, you know, there's just a little bit more confidence now that some of these valuations, remember stocks were at record highs in the US, are actually worthwhile if the overall economy is doing well and companies are making money.
Okay, Kathleen, thanks very much indeed. We'll be talking about technology a little bit later in the programme, but for now, that was Kathleen Brooks at Forex.com. Well, the main share index here in London finished the day up 0.7% at 6,636. In New York, the Dow is also higher at the moment. It's up 0.4% at 16,312. Currencies, the euro is at $1.38.1 US cents, the euro rising by about a third of a cent against the dollar, and the pound is at $1.67.5. That's a rise for sterling of about a tenth of a cent. Now, here's something it might not have occurred to you to worry about. When you wash your hair, are you helping deforest the planet?
That's the kind of fun I had, a pen ever had. The scent of your shampoo's driving us mad. Sweet as a whistle, cool as a breeze. You just love moments like these. You're a fresh smelling hair, shining nearly flake free man.
Seven fresh fragrances, so happy nose, and our anti-dandruff ingredient, so happy head. Head and Shoulders, making heads happier.
Well, I don't know about that, but a key ingredient in products like shampoo is palm oil. The trouble is large areas of the world's forests have been cleared to make way for palm oil plantations. Now the world's biggest consumer products company, Procter & Gamble, which makes Head & Shoulders, has bowed to pressure from environmentalists. The firm says that by 2020, no forests will have been harmed in the production of its palm oil. The pledge is being seen as a victory for Greenpeace, which draped huge protest banners from the windows of the company's HQ in Cincinnati last month. One of them read, Head and Shoulders wipes out dandruff and rainforests. Well, Bustar Maitar heads Greenpeace's Indonesia forest campaign, and he spoke to me from Jakarta.
The commitment itself that we see is good. The only problem that we discovered in this commitment is the timeline. The 2020 timeline for us seems too long. I mean, we need the action now. Procter & Gamble should be able to saying that by next year, their all producer, their all supplier should supplying them with the palm oil that not contain deforestation.
So you don't think it should take Procter & Gamble 5 years to get around to guaranteeing that its products weren't made through deforestation?
End of last year, Wilmar International, one of the biggest traders of the palm oil in the world, is making commitment to cleaning up their supply chains by 2015. What the Procter & Gamble should do is to making more faster to encourage more producers from on the ground to move to the no deforestation palm oil.
I wonder how easy, though, this is going to be to police. What might in reality be happening on the ground might be something completely different.
Well, that's why Greenpeace is here. That's why also I'm here in Indonesia to monitor what is happening on the ground. And then Greenpeace also has been working closely with the government to encourage government to taking a strong monitoring of the deforestation, that something public can openly see and telling what is happening on the ground.
So do you consider this a victory? Do you feel that what you've achieved with the likes of Procter & Gamble and also Colgate and L'Oreal, who've made similar commitments, is that a victory?
It's not the big victory. It's the small step to the long way to stop deforestation globally. Of course, we expect more and more companies join this movement to stop deforestation, not only in Indonesia, but the deforestation globally.
Aren't you up against economic realities here, though? I mean, the reality is that, you know, a lot of the countries involved in this kind of deforestation, as you would see it, are relatively poor. Palm oil is a valuable crop. It's useful to sell to companies like Procter & Gamble. Aren't you going against, if you like, the market here? Isn't this an impractical suggestion to be making?
What we are saying is, you know, it's not something like to stop developing a palm oil. What we are saying is to stop tracing forests for palm oil. So means palm oil can still grow, but in the degraded land area.
What does that mean, degraded land area?
For example, like open land, you know, a grassland area. And this is something that they can use for palm oil. Of course, with the strong process consultation with the local people, you know, approved by local community or indigenous people. So developing palm oil in the proper and a sustainable manner.
So rather than chopping down trees, you're saying they need to find new areas of land in order to grow palm oil.
Exactly, and then this new area is not in the forest area, but this new area is in degraded land, in the area that there is no more forest there, in the area that the community support that to developing palm oil.
That was Bustar Maitar of Greenpeace in Jakarta. Well, we did, of course, ask Procter & Gamble for an interview, but no one was available to talk to us. You're listening to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now, what is the best way to make sure you are secure in cyberspace? For some time now, we've been told to look out for a little padlock at the bottom of our internet browsers, especially, say, when we're banking online. Well, now it seems that that little padlock may not be as reassuring as we were led to believe. Our technology correspondent, Rory Kethlen-Jones, is with me. Rory, what's this about?
This is about a bug that's been found in something called OpenSSL, which is software that makes that is behind that little padlock that you rightly say we see at the top of a web browser. This vulnerability was discovered, which would allow hackers, if they found it, to basically go into various sites and emerge with a lot of sensitive data. It's caused something akin to panic in large sections of the computer security industry. One leading expert, leading commentator, described it as catastrophic. He said, on the scale of 1 to 10, I'd call this an 11. The good news, though, is that there is a patch available. The hole has effectively been closed, but only if the websites which use this software, and it's hundreds of thousands of sites use it, from very big, well-known ones, you know, the likes of Yahoo, Google and Facebook, to tiny ones. So the big ones have already patched. The smaller ones may not have. So a big concern.
So is this somebody who's been sitting there beavering away trying to, you know, trying to get this bug into people's systems? Or has it been found accidentally? I think it's called, is it Heartbleed? I think
Heartbleed, it's called. It's... What happens constantly in this industry is that people, security researchers with good intentions, with the right intentions, are always looking for vulnerabilities. They found this vulnerability and they've realised that it's been there for 2 years. What we don't know, of course, is if anybody with bad intentions found it during that time and exploited it. That's the big mystery. You know, one leading company I spoke to, Google, said they had patched their systems, and I put it to them that that didn't mean people were safe, because what if data had been taken away during the period when they weren't patched? They seemed fairly confident that wouldn't have happened, but it must be a lurking fear. And that's causing quite a lot of debate within the security industry about what is the best advice to give to consumers.
Yeah, so I suppose for now it's what, update your security software, take the patches as they're suggested to you on the screen, keep your virus protection.
Well, no, the main thing here is about passwords and looking at your passwords, making sure, I mean, it's a good wake-up call to all of us, not, for instance, to use the same password on every site, because then if they find it on a vulnerable site, they can use it on a site which is better protected. The best advice, I suppose, is this is a good opportunity perhaps to change several passwords and to look at doing that on a fairly regular basis, and to make them difficult passwords for people to spot.
Quite a few of my friends are still nervous about the idea, for example, of doing banking online, and they might look to that padlock as their guarantee that it's safe. I mean, stories like this don't help convert people who might be nervous on online traders, for example.
They don't. And there's one of a number of periodic scares. I think the comforting thing is that there is not much evidence of ordinary members of the public losing a lot of money. If things do go wrong, you've usually got companies only too happy to rush and try and close things down and to refund people. And most online banking systems have several layers of security. So that is some comfort.
Rory, thanks very much indeed. Our technology correspondent, Rory Kethlen-Jones there. Now, it's a symbol of virtue in Chinese-speaking societies. It's also the food of choice for pandas. I speak, of course, of bamboo, a material valued for its sturdiness and tenacity, and also for its use beyond the world of the panda. In Taiwan, a wide variety of products are made from bamboo, from roof tiles and rafts to mats and shoes. The industry was in decline there for decades, now though it is enjoying something of a renaissance. As the BBC's Cindy Su reports from the town of Zhushan, or Bamboo Mountain, the centre of bamboo production in Taiwan.
I've come to the Bamboo Culture Park. It's a park with lots of bamboo trees growing in it, as well as a hotel, a do-it-yourself workshop to make your own bamboo products, and a shop selling all sorts of bamboo goods, ancient and modern. This park was created by Zhushan's native son, Chen Jingfu. The park is the first in Taiwan devoted to the plant, which grows in many parts of the island, but now only about 50 families remain working in the industry. It's a trend reflected in other parts of Taiwan. Only about 240 bamboo products businesses remain on the island.
When I was growing up here, we never thought bamboo could be used in these ways. In the past, we used bamboo to make items for daily use, such as baskets for our produce, chopsticks, beds and toys. Now we're using biotech and combining it with industrialization. I'm only learning after 20 years in the industry that bamboo can be used in these ways. It's because the scientists did research and the government supported us. This has allowed bamboo farmers like us to develop well and to produce modern products.
At the Lin family's Fulin Crafts Workshop in Zhushan, the elder Mr. Lin is busy overseeing a handful of middle-aged women grinding small sticks of bamboo the length of a hand on machines. The devices are ear diggers, used by Chinese and Japanese people to get earwax out of their ears. Small businesses like this one still make these traditional products, but they are also increasingly making things out of bamboo never made before. In the back of the workshop, the younger Mr. Lin Liwei, carefully places a small metal piece onto a background made of sticks of bamboo to make a fashionable-looking clock. The clocks can help the Lins earn more money than the ear diggers. The younger and elder Mr. Lin now can make $5,000 a month. Back at the Bamboo Culture Park, Mr. Chen shows me the park's bed and breakfast hotel.
In this room, everything is made of bamboo. The floors, the tables, the bed, everything, the cabinets. It has a really nice smell and nice feel to it. Very natural. When you open the window, you can see, of course, bamboo trees outside. And even the mattress is made from bamboo charcoal. Taiwan's reinvention of bamboo's use has made it possible for small businesses like Mr. Chen's and the Lin families to stay alive and reverse the decline in bamboo usage.
Each stalk of bamboo can sprout several stalks. Bamboo absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide. If we don't use bamboo and don't cut the trees, they won't grow as much. If more people use bamboo, more bamboo trees will grow, and it will be good for the environment. Bamboo is not like oil, it's sustainable. It grows and grows. So we should encourage people to use bamboo and help improve our environment.
It is hoped that revenue will grow in coming years as more people become aware of the new products made from bamboo and see bamboo not just as a material of their grandparents' generation, but a part of modern life. For Jushan natives like Mr. Chen, they cannot imagine a world without bamboo.
That was the BBC's Cindy Sue reporting. Just time to recap our main business headline. Greece is expected to return to the international debt markets on Thursday. It'll sell bonds in the country's first long-term debt sale since its international bailout started 4 years ago. Thousands of striking Greeks have marched on Parliament in Athens to protest against job and spending cuts. Well, you can listen to this programme at your leisure by downloading it from the BBC Business page on Facebook. On Twitter, you can find out what stories we're chasing and hear audio from our top items. That's at BBC World Biz. But for now, that is all for me, Mike Johnson, and this edition of World Business Report.
You've been listening to World Business Report. If you want more insights into the world of business, you can download Business Daily from bbc.com/podcasts. If you want to contact us, you can email at world.business@bbc.co.uk. Or add your comments to our Facebook page at facebook.com/bbcbusiness. And remember, for news in an instant, you can follow us on twitter.com/bbcbusiness.